oh my darling Clementine, thou art. Hi, it's me, Mark Shea, and you're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, but you probably already knew that. And we're here every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And today we got a little change up happening here because poor Simca Fisher, she just wrote me like just before airtime to say, Corey's sick and I think I'm getting it and we have to go to ER. And so that's where they're off to. They've gone off to ER. But worry not, because our main guest, Elizabeth Scalia, is still here with us. And we've invited her on the show today. For those of you who are not familiar with Lizzie Scalia, she's the editor-in-chief at the English edition of Alatea.org, continuing the grand Catholic blogging tradition of starting blogs with hard-to-pronounce names. And...
you're not the first one to say that to me.
Well, it's one of those ones. There was a long struggle for people who work for Pathos to figure out how to pronounce that. I used to work for. I was in one of the early kind of Catholic startups that eventually became Catholic Exchange. But when it first started, they decided that the idea was going to be evangelization for the third millennium. Well, that's kind of a mouthful for a blog domain name. So instead, they named it E3Mil, which is impossible to describe. Everybody was trying to guess, how do you write that out exactly?
Yeah, that's like Entertainment 720 on Parks and Recreation. That isn't a good name.
Right. So... Anyway, I went from they finally changed the name to Catholic Exchange, which was much easier to just write out. And then I went from there to working for you, actually, at Pathos. Eventually, I started a blog, and you came along and asked me to write for Pathos when you were working there. And now you've gone off to Alatea, and you guys just won an award for your website. Congratulations.
We did, and thank you very much. I'll tell you, generally awards, I'm kind of like, I won an award, no big deal. Although that's probably a bad attitude to have because, you know, it's not as grateful as it should be. But this one, given how hard we've been working since September, this one really meant something to us. Good. I mean, it's a slip of paper, that's all it is, but it said, yes, we see the work that you're doing over there, and we think it's pretty darn good, and I do too.
Well, it is pretty darn good. Yes, you're doing a great job. And of course, Simca writes for you.
Simca writes. Deacon Greg.
Deacon Greg Kendra writes for you. One of these days, I'm going to come over there and say, can I write a thing for you? But I haven't done that yet.
Well, you know, man, pitch me something. I'm always getting pitches. Right now, I'm looking at my production schedule right now, and I have, I think, 20 pieces I need to look at. To see, you know, what stays, what goes, and what have you. So, I mean, pitch me something.
Well, I will, as soon as I can find time. Right now, I am in the middle of trying to draft 3 different book chapters.
That's insane. So,
yeah, it is. It really is insane. So, I barely wrote anything for my blog today because it was like, I don't have any time. And tomorrow I got to go out of town, and so it's all crazy, and it's all got to be done, like, super fast. So, anyway, but enough about that. You, speaking of writing book chapters, you've written a whole string of book chapters together and published them in a book called Little Sins Mean a Lot. And I wanted to talk about that. Lizzie is also, by the way, we're talking with Lizzie Scalia. And if you want to join the conversation, feel free to do so. You can do that by giving us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can call us or you can text us at that number. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. Lizzie, in addition to being the editor of the English edition of Alatea and writing Little Sins Mean a Lot, which we're about to talk about, she's also the author of Strange Gods, Unmasking the Idols in Everyday Life. And you can get these at Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm. At Amazon, and I understand Barnes & Noble, and of course through the publishers. It's OSV who is publishing Little Sins Mean a Lot. Okay. Not the other book was Ave Maria Press.
Now, just because of the way my eye works, for some reason when I saw the cover of your book, what really stood out was were the words "mean a lot." And then from there, all I could think of was, don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot called Mean a Lot, which I don't know what that says about me, but...
well, it dates you.
Okay. Yeah, it does date me. That's true. But so talk about Little Sins Mean a Lot.
Well, I'm really surprised that you didn't say that the cover shouted out the Giving Tree to you and made you wonder if it was a big socialist book. Because I've actually heard that.
Okay.
But the book is. I'll tell you how the story of how the book came about.
Okay.
Bert Gezzi, who is an acquisitions editor at OSV and a very good author in his own right, of course, contacted me a long time ago and said, "You know, I have this idea for a book. It's called Little Sins Mean a Lot. It's a great title, and I think you'd be the person to write it." And at that point, that's all we had was Little Sins Mean a Lot.
Okay.
And I said to him, "You've got to be out of your mind. I'm a walking, talking billboard for, you know, little sins and bad habits, and I'm like the last person who could credibly write this book." And so he said, "Well, that's probably why you should write it." So, and you know, then it's like, okay, yeah, nobody likes the smart ass. Go sit down. So he said, okay, think about it. And then I said I would. And every few months he'd say, are you thinking about it? Have you made a decision? And I'd be like, yeah, I'm still thinking about that. And finally, after a year, he sent me a contract. I said, how about you write that book? And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll take a look at the contract. And then a year later, I said, all right, I'll finally do this. And he said, great, I'll give you 9 months to write the book. And I said, don't do that. I said, tell me you want the book in 2 weeks and you can have it in 2 weeks. Tell me you want the book in 9 months and you're going to have it in 9 months and 2 weeks. because I am a champion procrastinator.
Okay.
And he has worked with enough writers that he should have taken me seriously. And I think he did take me seriously.
Uh-huh.
Nevertheless, let me think, 8 months and 2 weeks at it, he finally wrote to me and said, so how is the book coming? And I said...
What book?
you remember, have you ever seen the movie Bringing Up Baby? And Cary Grant is supposed to be going to play golf with Mr. Peabody, and he keeps getting waylaid by Katharine Hepburn, and he's yelling, be with you in a minute, Mr. Peabody, as he's driving away. That's kind of how it was with me. But I finally said, okay, I'm going to show a good faith here. I'm going to send you a chapter. I said, and I'll have the rest of the book for you by that 9-month and 2-week date. I said, but here, show good faith. Here's a chapter, chapter one. And the first chapter is, of course, on procrastination.
How perfect.
That's and so he seemed to enjoy that joke. And he didn't even argue with me that there is a sinful element to procrastination, which most people would not really believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those things where you say, oh, so you procrastinate. Oh, so you put things off for the next day. That's not really a sin. It doesn't make you a bad person. It's not like you're a bad person. And that, of course, speaks to the whole tenor of the times and how we have excused bad behavior within ourselves and the people around us simply by saying, well, you know, it's not like you're blowing up a bridge. You know, you're not kicking any puppies. You're not a bad person just because you did that, you know. Okay, so, you know, maybe you spent the rent money on, you know, a toy or something, but that doesn't make you a bad person. They just made a mistake. So this is how we talk to ourselves and how we talk to each other. And you can take a look at the state of the country and see what that's gotten us.
Right.
Somebody asked me last night, a priest said to me last night, why don't I ever hear people talk about cheating anymore in the confessional? I was like, well, look at our political system. We reward cheating. We think it's cool when people get away with stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it's completely messed up our perception of right and wrong to some extent. But in this case, in the case of the book, when I did finally sit down to think about little sins, the niggling little sins that we don't even think of as sort of gateway drugs to the bigger sins.
Right.
Procrastination seemed pretty clearly one to me, because it's like a refusal to engage in the world that's before you. It's like an RSVP of no to the big and small invitations that life is continually offering us. And it's also a show of ingratitude toward the gifts and talents that are the source of so many of those flattering invitations. I mean, if you're being asked to write something or sing something or participate in something, and you're, you know, doing the whole procrastination thing, you're kind of insulting the very gifts that got you those invitations. And that's been, of course, another kind of insult to the Lord and Creator, who is the source of all our gifts.
This conversation is making me very uncomfortable. Can we just talk about something else now?
No, because you have to learn this.
So, I'm sitting here being a victim of my own procrastination and other things that I've needed to do, and for me, I mean, part of the struggle is that I work. My workplace is the internet. That's where I do my job. Well, you know, imagine if you worked in a cubicle office. We'll have to talk about this after the break. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Elizabeth Scalia, the author of Little Sins Mean a Lot. And we'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Simca Fisher. We're expecting Simca Fisher. Simca's out today. And by the way, would no doubt, I'm sure, appreciate your prayers. Her little girl, Corey, has been feeling sick, and now Simca is getting sick as well. And so we will keep them and the rest of the family in our prayers. In the meantime, we're here today talking with Elizabeth Scalia. Elizabeth Scalia is my old boss. She used to be the editor at Pathos. Now she is the editor of the English channel at Alitea.org, and you can read her work all over the place, including her brand new book, Little Sins Mean a Lot. And we were talking before the break, talking about the little sin of procrastination. And I was saying, you know, one of the hard things, if you work, as many, many people do on the internet, you know, when you have a cubicle job, you could just kind of go in your cubicle or in your office and close the door and do your work. But when you work on the internet, sort of like working in a cubicle that opens out onto a warehouse that houses Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus with 1,000 attractions always happening all the time. That's what the internet is. And so it takes real discipline to just do your thing and not get distracted by all this stuff that is constantly flowing your way. And you know, some of this stuff, I'm really finding, like, Facebook has this thing now where even when you log off of Facebook, you still get these notifications that somebody just said something to you on Facebook and you should answer them right now. And it's like, go away. I don't when I log off Facebook, I don't need distractions luring me back to Facebook to go argue with somebody.
Well, Facebook, I've long maintained that Facebook is the devil. If I didn't have to be on Facebook for work, I seriously wouldn't go on it. It's for me, and I really felt this when I was writing Strange Gods, it is such a tool of self-reflection. And I don't mean in a good way. I mean in the way of a golden calf that mirrors you back to yourself, you know, nice and bright and shiny, and shows you yourself as you want to be seen. Which is, think about it, that's what the golden calf was, right? It was right. It was something that they burnished and shone, and it was strong, it was sturdy, it was not easily perturbed. All the things that the Hebrews would have wanted to be, and so they saw their reflections in this animal, and they kind of project that sense of themselves to it. And that's what Facebook is. It's a giant golden calf where you put something up on Facebook and then everybody says, ooh, your children are beautiful, you're wonderful, your garden looks great, oh, that looks like a scrumptious thing you just made, and so on and so forth. And, after a while, that's very intoxicating, and I think a real danger to our soul. And I don't mean to sound like scrupulous Sally when I say that.
I think you're right. I solve the problem by being a jerk, and then people don't give me that feedback. But there's different ways to to approach that danger. I think you're right. Well, one of the things I think, we started by talking about the little sin of procrastination, and you used the term gateway drug, which I think is very, very perceptive. That there's a real temptation to take the church's distinction between venial and mortal sin and turn it into sins that don't really matter versus really serious sins.
And as long as you're not committing those really serious sins,
then you're a good golden
person.
Yeah.
You're a good person.
And what the church means by venial and mortal sin is, sin that is venial sin is, in the church's tradition, is the gateway drug. You start by doing small sins, and you work your way toward, in the case of procrastination, you can work your way towards sloth.
Exactly. Sloth and sometimes anger and sometimes a few other sins too. That's actually what I talk about in the book, is that in each one of these 13 sins, I was going to go 12, but I just couldn't stop. In each one of these sins, you're basically talking about a seedling or a root of one of the seven deadly sins, and often more than one of the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
It was only while I was writing about procrastination that I realized, this is sloth. This is, and it's a lifelong thing with me too. I mean, my husband a long time ago said to me, when you were little and you had your first words and your mother was all proud of you, thinking that you said, "Mama, mama," she was wrong. What you were saying was, "Manana, baby, manana, baby," because this is my instinct to put everything off.
Yeah.
Probably why I became a writer. What was really fun though in this was that when I was every chapter of the book, after I do like a little, not a long essay at all, just brief kind of 4 pages, 5 pages of thinking on what the sin is and why it's a sin and what it might be the root of, then I do a little, what does the church say about this? And then I'll excerpt maybe something from the catechism, because unlike, I am not like some people who think that the catechism is the great book, the great big Catholic book of no. It's, a wonderful, compassionate, and wise thing to refer to. But I also then quote the saints talking about these things at all. And then after that, I try to give some practical, I don't want to say advice because I'm the last person to give anybody advice, but how do we break the pattern or the habit? And I try to give some practical ideas. Regrettably, with procrastination, I couldn't say, refer to the patron saint of procrastination, because as far as I could tell, that was somebody called Saint Expeditus.
Are you serious?
No, well, he's mentioned in the Roman martyrology as one of a group of martyrs who was executed in Armenia. But there's no proof he ever existed. And at first I was like, wow, great, Expeditus, this is fantastic. Uh-huh. And then what they kind of figured out was that a crate of holy relics from the catacombs in Rome was shipped to a convent in Paris.
Yeah.
And the nuns there were not good at Latin. So they saw on the outside of it Expedito and said, oh, this is Saint Expeditious or Expeditus. And so this little cult grew out of this, just kind of being bad at Latin. So okay. His cult was eventually suppressed.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So one there is no Saint Expeditus.
I love the Catholic Church for stuff like that. You know, I really do. It just delights my heart that things like that happen. But yeah.
Well, I've decided that if there is to be a patron saint of procrastination, it should reasonably be Saint Augustine, for the very simple prayer that, you know, make me chaste, but not now.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah. So when I'm really feeling like I'm having a hard time getting something done, Augustine's my go-to guy now.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. Well, and he is so modern. That's what strikes me about Augustine again and again, is how contemporary he still sounds, especially because of prayers like that he's honest enough to do that. And he is literally the inventor of confessional literature. There was never, ever anything like the confessions until he invented that whole genre of literature. And that's such a postmodern...
It's the reality TV of his day.
Sure.
I mean, in some respects, it was exactly that. Because what do people love more than anything else? They love looking in on people's lives and, you know, feeling included. Again, this is the whole Facebook thing. And they also then love to judge it, you know, weigh it, judge it, gossip about it. And that's actually one of the other little sins in the book, is gossip.
Okay. Interesting. Go on.
Oh, well, you know, gossip, George Harrison called it the devil's, that soul betraying so-and-so, the devil's radio. But I really only became attuned to gossip as something sinful thanks to Pope Francis. Very early on in his pontificate, he gave one homily where he said that gossip, there's a dark joy that we... How did he say it exactly? He said, I don't know why it is exactly, but there's a dark joy in gossiping. We begin by saying nice things, and then we slip into gossip, and we make the object of our chatter merchandise to be bartered. That was when he was in a good mood, talking about gossip.
Uh-huh.
And I remember talking to... It might have been Joanne McPortland, but I was talking to someone, and we both realized that we... had gone from having a very practical conversation into something that was, and either she or I, one of us said, you know, this is starting to feel a lot like dark joy. We should stop this. And that has sort of become our code now. If we're maybe, sending some emails back and forth or whatever, and one of us feels like, you know, slipping into this, we'll just say, enough dark joy, let's go to bed or whatever.
Well, I like that.
Yeah. So that's the prompting of the Pope.
I like that because, it's certainly something that, that I fall prey to. It's something that pious people, and I include
you're going to get yourself in trouble. Go ahead.
I include myself in that. It's one of those things that pious people are especially skilled at. Have you heard about Lizzie Scalia? I'm telling you this so that you can pray. we do that stuff all the time, you know? So, we're up against the break, but we'll return with Elizabeth Scalia. We're talking about her new book, Little Sins Mean a Lot, and we'll be back on Connecting the Dots right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Mark Shea, and we are here today with Elizabeth Scalia talking about her book, Little Sins Mean a Lot. If you want to join the conversation, if you want to talk to Lizzie or me, give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can join the conversation and direct all praise to Lizzie Scalia, direct all complaints to me, and we'll have a great chat. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. We were talking before the break, another of the little sins, gossip. It is so easy to do that Christian thing of, you know, have you heard about Elizabeth Scalia? Ugh. It's awful. It's just awful. And I'm telling you this so that you can pray.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, I had there was a someone on Facebook who gratuitously called me a name. I don't remember, empty headed or something, and otherwise gossiped about me. And somebody else let me know about it. And I wasn't too perturbed about it. But then another time I actually caught this guy in the act of gossiping about me with another guy on Twitter. Mm. And I couldn't help it. I guess I was in one of my moods. And I just started jeering at them. Look at these good Catholic men gossiping on social media. Doesn't gossip make you feel better than the person you're talking about? Gossip validates you, doesn't it? Look at these men without chests gossiping like washerwomen. I was really in a bad mood. And both of them blocked me.
Oh, well, so that's amazing.
I don't see that anymore.
That's the man. Well, you know, but it's, I got to say, I mean, sometimes out of sight, out of mind, you know, Paul says have nothing to do with foolish and stupid quarrels. And there are a lot of just foolish and stupid quarrels. And one of the best things you can do a lot of times is just, you don't have to fix every single dumb thing that every crazy person says. Sometimes you just say, you know, sayonara. I remember reading the Sermon on the Mount, one of the first times I read the Sermon on the Mount, and I was scandalized because I wasn't a Christian yet. I was just beginning to read the New Testament the first time. This is in college. The first time I had ever sat down and read the New Testament or read one of the Gospels. And you get to the part of the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus says, do not cast your pearls before swine. Do not give what is, you know, sacred to dogs. And I was just shocked by that. You're not supposed to say things like that, Jesus. You're supposed to be, you know, gentle Jesus, meek and mild. And this is not at all what I was expecting from the brochures. But, you know, the older I get, the more I think, you know, Jesus makes perfect sense now to me that there are people who ask questions because they want to find things out. Those people, I'm happy to answer their questions. But there are also people who just ask questions because they're trying to keep from finding things out. You know?
Well, they're asking in bad faith.
Right, they're asking in bad faith. Or they're like, you know, like this guy, you know, the sort of let's you and him fight kind of approach to gossip. And those people, it's like, you've got nothing in your mind but poison. Why do I need to fix you or, you know, engage with this? And so
why do I need to entertain you? Why should I be your entertainment for this evening?
Right. And so there really are times where the best approach, I think, to gossip is just to say, bye.
There's actually a great line in The Imitation of Christ, and I wish I could remember it right now, because I actually used it to someone who tried to do that to me once. I literally just left my oratory, and I read, I don't remember what the quote was now, but it was basically Thomas A. Kempis saying, you know, these people want to make a public spectacle of themselves, you know, and publicly denigrate the face of Christianity. Why in heck would I want to be involved with that? Mm-hmm. And that's really the truth. The thing about gossip, and you know, earlier I quoted Pope Francis about dark joy, and I said that's what he said when he was in a good mood, and that was when he was first elected. What he said not too long after that was, I think he was not in such a good mood, and he said gossip always has a criminal side to it. There's no such thing as innocent gossip. Some may say that there are persons who deserve to be gossiped about, but it is not so. Now that's pretty harsh stuff, that the criminal aspect of gossip, because it is a soul-destroying thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't destroy the soul of the person you're gossiping about. It destroys your own soul.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true. I want to move on, mostly because we've only talked about two minor sins, and I can think of dozens and dozens. How many did you cover in the book?
I covered 13, and most of them, I think, are things that you don't generally think of as sinful, like judgment and suspicion. Let's see, I'll go right through it here. I've got the book right here. Excessive self-interest. Okay. Self-neglect, the other side of that, which is self-neglect. You wouldn't think of that as a little sin, but it actually really is. Self-indulgence to the point where you feel like you're entitled to things. Judgment and suspicion, gloominess and griping, which is my favorite chapter in the book because it's really funny. And you wouldn't think it would be because it's about gloominess and griping. But I was raised by the champion gloominess and griping person, my mom, who's hilarious. In retrospect, she is hilarious. But growing up, I didn't really think so. I mean, I'll give you an idea. My mother, one of my earliest memories of my mother was her coming up to me and showing me her communion pin and her little prayer book from when she made her first communion and saying to me very seriously, "When I die, make sure this goes into my casket or I will haunt you." And I was 4.
Oh, man.
Okay. So you better believe, I was 37 when she died. You better believe I went and found that communion pin in that prayer book and it was put on her. I didn't want to have to deal with that at all. But she was kind of this wonderful, and I was fully grown and advanced in my years before I understood really how difficult her life had been and how it became such a gloomy affair. But like she was the sort of person who would pour my breakfast cereal, again, I was little, and you know, as she was pouring it, say, "The world is going to end in the year 2000. And then she'd kind of float back to her coffee pot, and I'd stood over there doing math, and math was hard, you know, and I kind of figured out that I'm going to be 42 years old. Crap. I'm going to be 42. She's 42 now. That's not fair. She gets to live all that time, and I'm going to die in the year 2000. That's not fair. And this is the kind of stuff I just got fed every single day. And
wow.
So it's not really surprising then that there was a time I was about, I don't know, maybe 8 years old, where we had a basement, and my father had a piano in the basement. My dad was a really good musician, very gifted. And I was sitting on the steps of the basement, and I seriously had not thought of this until it was time to write the book, so I figured the Holy Spirit wanted me to put it in there. I was sitting on the steps of the basement watching him play the piano, and he's clearly, you know, really into the music and really enjoying himself. He's, you know, a man fulfilled in the moment. And, you know, you're 8 years old and you're looking at that and, oh, you know, Daddy's so happy. I love Daddy. And then it occurs to me, thanks to my mother, that, you know, someday he's going to die. And so I'm like, oh, Daddy's going to die. And of course, then I started crying and you know, I'm getting myself worked up into a hysterical frenzy until I scared my father's hands from the keyboard. My mother comes running because I'm like, wah! And my mother says, "What is wrong with you?" And I said, "I don't want Daddy to die." And I wailed and I go, "And I don't want you to die." And, you know, my mother's, I can see her going pale. And she's like, "We're not dying." That meant nothing to me. Okay. I was howling by then. My lungs were burning scarlet and I was starting to hyperventilate, you know, and I was like, "But someday you're going to die." And like my father wasn't a drinker, but that made him go find the Johnny Walker Red. And my mother didn't know what to do with me. She finally brought me a glass of water and said, "You got to stop thinking like this. It's bad for your veins."
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's a great story, but I mean, it's also true that if we're so busy being gloomy and negative about everything, then we're missing all the gifts. And if we're missing all the gifts, we can't be grateful. And if we can't be grateful, then we can't be joyful. Because joy is gratitude is the root of joy. And now, more than anything else, we're just kind of pushing away what God is offering us.
I got to say, Lizzie, it's a real act of grace, though, that you can, because when I hear you tell those stories, I think, man, it's amazing you didn't commit suicide when you were 16 years old, you know? Because just getting that that slow drip every day into your, speaking of your veins, you know, but it really, it's an amazing gift that you can look back on that and see how funny that is too at the same time, you know. That,
oh yeah, when I wrote this chapter, right. Back, no, go ahead.
Well, I was saying that requires real perspective. What I think of is C.S. Lewis, his great character Puddle Glum in The Silver Chair, who's just this magnificently gloomy creature. And he based Puddle Glum on his gardener, who I will tell you about C.S. Lewis's gardener when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Lizzie Scalia, author of Little Sins Mean a Lot. And we'll be back on Connecting the Dots right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Elizabeth Scalia, the author of Little... I keep saying offer. Why do I do that? The author of Little Sins Mean a Lot. And before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about gloominess. C.S. Lewis also had a perspective on that kind of thing. And he based his extremely gloomy sort of Eeyore character of Puddle Glum on his gardener. There's a famous story about Lewis. Lewis got married in 1960, and for his honeymoon, he decided that he and his wife would do something for them extraordinary, which was leave England. She was an American widower who was already diagnosed with cancer, or a widow, not widower. And anyway, they were going to go to Greece. And so as they were pulling out of the driveway to go drive to the airport to go to Greece, the gardener signaled to him. And this is his honeymoon, mind you. The gardener signals to him, so he stops the car. The gardener comes over to the window and says, "Mr. Lewis, did you hear about the plane that crashed? Everyone aboard was burnt beyond recognition. Think of that. Burnt beyond recognition." His wife was horrified. And Lewis, having the kind of perspective that Lewis had of his gardener, Lewis loved this guy because he was always like this. And Lewis just erupted in laughter. They drove off to the honeymoon, and he was just in stitches after that, you know? And there it takes a certain kind of grace to be able to hear something like that and have the kind of perspective, especially, you know, if it's something that you were raised with.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in the end, I find more and more, and the older I get, and this really sounds like a cliche, but the older I get, the more I see that it seems like everything that happened, for good or for bad, fit into the plan of who it was I was supposed to become, how much compassion perhaps I was supposed to have, you know, where I might have needed insight at a particular time. It's one of those things the saints say, and we always say, oh, the saints are crazy. But I think they're right. You know, everything happens towards God's good purpose.
Yeah.
And yeah. we can trust, and as Philip Neri said, we can trust in that, yeah. even if we don't understand it.
Well, talk about some of the other little sins.
Well, there's deliberate spite and passive aggression. That's the only sin in the book that I really said, you know, this is one that's not natural to me. I'm not a terribly spiteful person. I've never seen any point to spite. Possibly because I was raised with that in that environment as well. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me to be something that is not constructive at all. But I know a lot of people really are spiteful. And there's a story in there about a woman I knew who once didn't talk to her husband for 3 weeks because he had called her a big mouth. And that really upset her. Mm-hmm. So she didn't talk to him. It turned out when she was mad, she didn't talk. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this, however, and so I would go visiting my friend's house, and for 3 solid weeks, the woman didn't say a word mm-hmm. to anyone. But I, of course, because I'm a little egoist and because I'm also insecure, assumed it all had to do with me, that she okay. didn't like me. Okay. As it turned out, I was coming into the house pretty much the same time every night as her husband. So I was so getting the big freeze without it having anything at all to do with me. And okay. what happened was like 3 weeks into this, I finally said to her, because I can't be anything but frank, I said, you know, are you mad at me? Have I done something to offend you? And she was like, no, why? And I said, well, because you haven't said a word to me in 3 weeks. You know, you always seem like you're mad. And she goes, no, this isn't about you. She goes, I'm mad at my husband. He called me a big mouth. And until he apologizes, you know, I'm not talking to him. The house is meticulous. I'll make his meals and everything, but I'm not talking to him until he apologizes. And I was like, you haven't talked to your husband for 3 weeks because he called you a big mouth? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, you know, what if he dies on the way to work? What are you going to do? You know, that just, I didn't get it. You know,
yeah.
you take what you've got in front of you and you deal with it, but you don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, because I said that to her, she got really mad at me and didn't talk to me. But only for the day. The next day, I guess she had thought it over or whatever, and then she was very nice to me after that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's
funny. It's funny because you and I have, and I suspect it's because I'm scrupulous, but we have very different notions of what is a venial sin. I recognize there's the seven deadly sins and so on. But spite seems to me to be a very serious intellectual sin and moral sin. And so I would never have regarded it as a minor sin.
Most people don't understand why they're being spiteful. Most people, it's an instinctive kind of a thing, and it's usually coming from a place of hurt. Obviously there are components of wrath and pride connected to it for sure. But the very act of being spiteful itself is usually generated because somewhere along the line, you've been hurt and you haven't figured out how to address that. Like this mother of my friend, who just didn't have the tools or the wherewithal to understand how to just simply be upfront with someone when she was angry. So, I mean, and if that's the case, then I think it is still a venial sin until you're aware of it. I think awareness is what makes it a bad sin, because once you know and you're still screwing around, then you've got a problem.
Okay. Well, and that might be a definitional thing. For me, spite, it can't be unconscious. If I'm spiteful, I know what I'm doing. That's why I'm spiteful. I'm putting everything into, you know, making sure that the shiv goes home and is really...
But I would imagine that your spite is a lot more intellectual than this woman's was. I'm sure that you draw on all of your resources and all of your education, and, you know, it becomes a lot more harmful than someone just not talking to her husband for 3 weeks because she doesn't know what else to do.
Yeah. You know? Spite for me is going out of your way to hurt somebody. That's the goal. You know, but talk about other little
things. Oh, hold on. Let me grab the book.
Okay.
Here. Talk about others. Well, we can talk about half-assing it or phoning it in. That's a good one. I called and half-assing it, and I was on the radio with, I don't know, one of the really prominent Catholic channels, and the person who was interviewing me didn't use the word half-assing it, and I was really slow on the draw. I didn't pick up that he was trying to be, I guess, family-friendly. So I was like, oh, you mean half-assing it? I was like, yeah, that's to me not being very swift on the uptake there.
Okay.
But, phoning it in. I mean, this is something we don't think about as being...
Lizzie, could you sit a little closer to your mic? You're...
You know what? I just adjusted it. Hold on a second.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah, okay.
You know, is that better?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. I think we don't appreciate the work in front of us. I read a really great quote today from Pope Benedict, and I wish I knew where I read it, but he was talking about the dignity of work. It might have been Pope Francis, one of the last two popes. And he was talking about the dignity of work, and whatever the work in front of you is work that, you know, gives you dignity and contributes to your personhood. And in the book, I was thinking about all the times I've done a so-so job just to get it over with, or I haven't appreciated the work in front of me as, you know, work, a livelihood, an appreciation of my skills and my gifts and things like that. But then again, I'm a Benedictine oblate, so I'm supposed to care about this stuff. In the rule of St. Benedict, it says, you know, if you use a utensil, if you use a tool, you know, you clean it, you put it back where it belongs, you respect the fact that this is something you need in your life, and you do the right thing by it. Me, I put a jar of aspirin down, forget it, I'm never going to find that thing again, because I haven't put it where it belongs. And this is coming down to maturity and mindfulness, but it's also about laziness and inattention and things like that. You know, and so, yeah, I'll tell you, my older son, his philosophy even in elementary school was that homework was the devil because it infringed on his own time. You know, he did his time in school, he put his times in there, and now his own time was for his imaginings and his interest. And that kind of got me wondering about the whole idea of why we're all feeling so intruded on in our lives by the iPhones and the interconnectedness of everything. That we're kind of becoming desperate to enjoy a little of our own time. And if that's not contributing to, you know, that kind of sense of half-assing it. And my other son came in and he talked about, he'd been at a fast food restaurant and there was a mom and a little boy, and his son was like, I think 4 years old or so. They were having lunch, and while the boy was chattering and playing with his food, the mother was making those mm-hmm sounds, you know, uh-huh, yeah, honey, uh-huh, while she was looking at her smartphone and reading and texting. And my son said, you know, the little boy kept trying to get his mother's attention, and she never looked up. She was just completely engrossed in her phone. And finally, the little boy got on his knees before her on the bench and took her face in his hands and forced her to look at him. And when he did, the mother said, cut it out.
Straightforward. Hey, Lizzie Scalia, I want to thank you for being on the show today. We've been talking about Lizzie's book, Little Sins Mean a Lot. You can get it at Amazon. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. Our producer was Ethan Bowen. And I will be back tomorrow with Tom McDonald. Till then, bye-bye.